Hi, this is Scott Love, host of Melp Talk. Today, our special guest is Melanie Rowan, trainer, coach, mediator, 2026 conference speaker, and also a longtime NALPer. Melanie, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. So tell us a little bit about your background. You're a longtime NALPer, but you've also been working in conflict resolution, specifically conflict resolution skills training. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I started out as a lawyer in a large firm for just a couple of years. I was in law practice for a long time as advocate in the LGBTQ civil rights movement. And that period when I was doing that work was when marriage equality was being very actively litigated in the states and in federal court. So I was part of that litigation and enjoyed it. But also we did a lot of civil litigation between parties where somebody had really done a lot of harm to a queer or a trans person. That work felt very meaningful and important to me, but the way that I needed to show up as an advocate, which is, you know, when you're a litigator, you're putting people on the defensive, you're very forcefully making your point, that started to feel pretty bad to me. So I started thinking about what other work would feel more aligned. And at the same time, I found lawyer and law student professional development. So I transitioned over to Berkeley Law and was working as the public interest advisor there, the career development office. And simultaneously went out and got trained as a mediator, started doing that work, and then eventually became a teacher of conflict resolution skills. On the NALP front, I got involved in NALP right away and, of course, felt like I had just found my people.
That's right.
And just really fell in love with the professional development side of it, but also did love doing this teaching of conflict resolution skills. I eventually moved on to working at Latham & Watkins as an attorney development manager, still doing the conflict resolution work as well. And then for years was looking at how could I bring these two things together into one sort of full-time practice for myself, which I launched just last fall. So now I'm kind of out on my own doing training, coaching, and mediation all at once, and really excited to talk more about how conflict resolution skill sets are actually incredibly helpful to NALPers and folks in the legal profession at the same time.
Well, this is fantastic. I think you've got a really good breadth of credentials. You're real bona fide in this area, and you know how to talk to people and help them get better with conflict resolution. And let's kind of get into it. What's the definition of conflict? As you talk about it here, why is talking about it important for legal career professionals?
Yeah, so we all are just regularly encountering conflict in our personal lives, in our work lives. It includes we have differences of opinions with others. And then for NALPers, too, a lot of us are in roles where we're supporting people, we're managing other people who have disagreements among themselves, and we're called on sometimes formally, but I think much more often actually informally, to do something about that because it's affecting our stakeholders some way. And again, I mean, very much true in schools and in employer spaces. And we kind of occupy these places in our institutions where we're looked to as sort of fixers, or we're smoothing the life of the institution. So when there's a conflict or a disagreement or a difficult conversation that's impacting people whose performance or whose experience we're responsible for, we just kind of get called in and we're sort of mediators, or we're sort of coaches or whatever it is, facilitators to help people around that issue. But one of the things that I've noticed, I'll say, for a long time, it really felt to me like in our profession and in NALP, the word conflict itself, it didn't really register with folks. And it wasn't a word that people could pick up on in conversation and move forward with. People could talk about difficult conversations. They could talk about feedback. They could talk about having differences of opinions or disagreements. But the word conflict was kind of like...
What do you think that is? Just the risk associated with it, maybe?
I think how I read it was that in our broader culture, conflict has been kind of stigmatized. And I think our thought would be in the workplace, if I'm in something I'm going to call a conflict, I'm doing my job wrong. Mm. It's hard. It's something we want to avoid. And it sounds like a real problem.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's not. It's a very normal part of being human. And I think increasingly people are recognizing that. I'm definitely seeing other PD providers out here using the term conflict in their list of offerings, which I think is a great sign. And people are interested in coming to these workshops at the NALP conference now, where we're actually talking about conflict resolution. So I feel like we're in a little bit of a different place with it, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I think perhaps it has a finality to it. Like if we have conflict, that's the end of our relationship. And I've found a lot of times there can be an opportunity in the workplace. What do you think about that? About conflict becoming an opportunity and reframing it that way?
Yeah, that is absolutely what draws me to working with it in the end, because it's not so much about tamping down what's difficult in order to just move past the disagreement as quickly as possible, but actually harnessing the energy that people bring, including tough feelings like anger or fear, harnessing that energy and getting to the bottom of what is it that people know and what is it that people want, that if we find out about it and we face it, we can actually come up with a much better solution to whatever's going on. Something is not working and we're going to better fix it if we really dive into, okay, what is this disagreement? What's this about for us?
Yeah. So how do we set ourselves up to take advantage of that opportunity that conflict presents instead of getting caught up in the difficulty of it and getting stuck?
Well, okay. So starting with what does get us stuck, I think there's a few things, right? Like one of them is a lot of people have anxiety about having a real conversation because the trust isn't there to communicate openly. And they, you know, maybe they fear some consequences. Maybe they just find it really hard to be around other people's difficult feelings or the way that people express those feelings. So that maybe they're avoiding, or there's unclear communication, or you're having the same conversation over and over and over. You're not getting anywhere with it. It's sort of like, what are we missing? We're talking past each other. But also another thing that gets people stuck is maybe they do feel comfortable openly communicating about this, but they get real dug in on their positions and they just won't let go of the particular thing that they want or they don't want. And usually what's underlying that kind of situation where somebody just sticks to their point and will not move is actually not feeling understood about why that thing was important to them in the first place. If people aren't feeling heard or understood, for some people, it is almost impossible to hear or understand another person. And a lot of the time, they also don't necessarily have self-awareness around that. But the way to alleviate that stuckness is to create a situation where everybody gets to feel understood. Sometimes that's a third party. You can bring a third party in, and sometimes NALPers are those third parties. Sometimes you might be one of those people, but you can find it in yourself to also understand the other person and then ask for them to understand you. That's possible too. So it's about having a real conversation, which requires the skills to really understand each other. And maybe it's a little one-sided at first. So that's part of it too, is supporting the other person to show up in a different
way. Melody, I'm going to share that story I shared with you before. Is that okay? Good. So,
yeah,
and for everybody listening, I was telling Melanie, I attended a seminar from Dr. Marshall Rosenberg on nonviolent communication, where he said the whole key in resolving conflict is to understand the emotion behind it. And years ago, I had a stalker. I would write posts on my blog at that time, and he would call me and say, I know you're writing about me. And I had no idea who he was. And then one day he called me and he said, I know you're writing about me. And I had this bad thing happen to me at work. And I know you're writing about me. And I said, you sound angry. And he says, you're darn right I'm angry. And I said, well, if that happened to me in the workplace, I would be upset and angry also. And at that point, the walls went down. And he said, well, maybe you're not writing about me. That was how I resolved it. What do you think about that, Melody? I guess I did a good job empathizing, right?
Yeah, that's perfect. You did do a good job empathizing. And I really, the words you used, that the wall came down, that's exactly it, is when we're feeling frustrated or unheard, or when we have a judgment of another person, maybe is another way this happens, a wall goes up between us and we can't connect. By being willing to greet him where he was at and acknowledge the difficult feelings and allow those difficult feelings and directly deal with it, you let him change where he was at.
Why do you think it works that way?
So it's beyond me to know why our brains and hearts work that way, but I can say I've just seen it over and over and over again, is once someone feels acknowledged and understood, and particularly feels from the other person, hey, I want to be with you in this. I want to understand you. And I'm not just making a show of understanding you to get you to go away. I'm actually really trying because I care about you. That is sort of a big exhale for a person. And then they can start to hear and they can start to be curious about, well, what are the other aspects of this that I'm maybe not thinking about?
I think that kind of diffuses the stress, where it's a big sigh of relief when we feel understood. Tell me about a time, and you don't have to mention the parties specifically, but where you were that mediator and you helped build understanding and empathy between those two parties. How did you do that? And what was the result from that, Melanie?
So one story that comes to mind is I worked with a family where there were two adult siblings who had a difficult, you know, conflict-ridden background between the two of them going back to when they were kids. They wanted to be able to get to a place where one of them had a child, wanted the other sibling to be able to have a relationship with that child. So they wanted to support that. But the two of them could not get together in the same space and be in the same space without really getting frustrated with each other. And so that was interrupting the one person's ability to be an uncle to their niece. So what we did is, you know, without having it be a therapeutic process, I just kind of listened to each of them in turn about what historically was the dynamic here. How has that played out for you? What does it look like when you get upset? What are the thoughts and feelings that you have that get in the way here and that bring those walls up between the two of you? And they weren't being asked to understand each other right off the top. I was doing it for them. I'm understanding the one person and I'm understanding the other person, and they have no responsibility for understanding each other. I'm just asking them to be patient and let me understand each of them together, because you can understand somebody without agreeing with them. And once they're able to see, Melanie, the mediator, she's able to understand this other person and I feel understood by her, maybe I can start to let in the other person's understanding of the situation. And what became very clear was that once we understood, they were having very much a symmetrical, kind of a mirror image experience of each other. They both, when they felt rejected by the other person, they pushed back twice as hard. So that was an immediate pushing away from each other all the time. And that would happen when they were together in the same space, because things would be sped up and they'd be trying to sort of race to react to each other. Right. So once we illuminated that, there started to be some hope that they could actually be in the same room together and have a different experience.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was important not to force them to understand each other, but to let me do it in that case. Some people, like I said, are capable of having that experience together without a third party helping. But sometimes having a third party help really does do it, because they can demonstrate, hey, I can understand you and I can understand you. And I'm not saying I agree with either of you. You don't need me to agree. I'm not a judge. I'm just here for you.
I think what you said, we can understand each other without having to agree with each other. We could apply that in the context of the workplace, in a political context, bringing people together instead of divisiveness in a family context. I think that's universally so healthy. And I appreciate your work in that area. Let's kind of go back to the workplace. Civility in the workplace, though. There's a lot of value in having a positive workplace or school culture, but is there a tension in the workplace with embracing conflict and disagreement in the culture? What do you think about that?
I think a lot of us might feel a tension there, but it's something we can get past and we should get past, because allowing people to bring their difficult feelings, like that anger you talked about within your story or in a workplace situation, often people are frustrated about something because they need to accomplish something and someone else is doing something that's making that difficult for them. Frustration, maybe fear. Allowing those feelings in and allowing people to really express those feelings is what creates the opportunity for change. We can allow that in our workplaces. And I just want to flag too, a lot of the behaviors that are associated with that are culturally bound, right? So when we talk about allowing people to express difficult feelings, what we're probably talking about is behaviors like speaking more loudly than normal, or maybe speaking more quietly than normal, speaking faster, gesticulating more, using forceful language, swearing, that kind of thing. Those are expressions of difficult feelings that we might want to create room for in order to get this better result from people, and in order, in fact, for people to be able to show up fully and build better workplace relationships by getting to be themselves. That can all help us with conflict. Where the line can be, where we can say, okay, we don't want to have this in our workplace, are behaviors that really cross the line into abusive, such as personal attacks, name calling, maybe invasions of other people's personal space, that kind of thing. There's still room to say, okay, we have a culture of civility, and this is what that means. But allow people to be angry occasionally and say that that's okay, but we want to learn how to concretely name and label those behaviors. And you mentioned nonviolent communication. I think you mentioned nonviolent communication earlier, which if people are looking for more on how we stop labeling behaviors in a way that's stigmatizing or that's vague, such as this is yelling that you're doing right now, and start learning how to speak about it in concrete terms so that we can really work with what it is. You're speaking very loudly. When I'm being spoken to that way, it's difficult for me to listen.
Yeah.
Much more concrete, not judgmental. There's not a moral piece to it. It's just this level of volume makes it hard for me to hear myself think.
Yeah.
What can we do about that? That kind of thing if we learn how to talk about things in that way, instead of simply tamping it down as like, this is uncivil right now, we have much better chance of being able to work concretely with our differences and disagreements. And I really do think that we can do both.
Right. So the hope is that legal career professionals can both lean into conflict and their roles in order to take advantage of the opportunities disagreements offer, like you mentioned, and at the same time, support a positive culture. But it sounds challenging to do both of those at once. What do people need in order to be able to do that, Melanie?
Yeah. So these are skill sets that can definitely be built. I always want to carry like a message of hope. It seems overwhelming to some people, but really, like, we can do this. The skills are, okay, number one, we already talked about this, but being able to really listen to understand another person. And there's an outside piece to that, your behaviors, how you're listening to what you're saying back. Active reflective listening, I would say, is a central thing to that. And there's an internal piece too, which is connecting with your own curiosity and empathy for the person, even if a wall is kind of coming up because you don't like what they're saying or they're triggering something in you in some kind of way. So that outward piece is behavioral, at checking in with them to make sure we've understood, we can practice that. And then the inside piece is knowing yourself well enough to understand like, oh, hey, this person is really pushing my buttons. And I actually know a little bit about my buttons, and I'm kind of starting to understand that I'm reacting so badly against them, not necessarily because of them, but because they're reminding me of this much worse thing that happened in my past or something else like that. Doing that work to understand all that so that you can then have this skill of reconnecting with your curiosity and empathy for the person who's actually in front of you and your commitment to understand them. So that's one whole skill.
Great. And all of that, it requires emotional awareness. It requires confidence in who you are, being willing to admit weakness in yourself. And it's something I tell my kids, the person you need to be honest with the most in your life is you. Be honest with yourself. But that's really hard. How do you think we can build these skills, Melanie?
So one thing is practice. And I mean, practice is just king. The good news is there's a lot of different ways to practice. For example, formally, you can do experiential trainings. I offer those through the Center for Understanding and Conflict, and it's a whole multi-day thing. It's role-play based, it's experiential, and people really get into working with themselves. So if you want to go deep on it, that's one thing. The other thing is just to look out for different types of PD offerings. And again, a lot of our providers are offering this now. I know we NALPers, often what we're doing is choosing to bring these in for our constituents, but if you can access them for yourself too, that is awesome. And then at the conference, of course, the annual education conference and the PDI conference, we've had this kind of content and we're going to continue to. I'm doing one in April in Florida, and you know, we're going to continue to do it, I'm sure. You can also practice with a coach if that's something you're able to access. They're there to reach your goals with you, right? So you can say, hey, I'm hoping to work on being better able to hold my own view of something while I'm also wholeheartedly taking in what someone says. Can you help me get there? And you figure out together how you're personally going to get there. Another thing, and I love suggesting this to NALPers because it's the kind of thing NALPers like to do, is actually get with a friend who really wants to build these skills too. And you can combine, right, practicing the skill of listening to understand. So one person will sit and do reflective listening with the other person. The other person is there talking about, what is it about this specific type of person or this specific type of situation that really triggers me? So they're working to understand themselves. They're building that self-awareness. Friend is working on listening to understand. Then you can switch roles. Everybody gets some skill building in, and you can do it on a regular basis. It's actually it's a very grounding practice to like build into your work life. And it's fun if you pick somebody that you like working
with.
That's
great.
So
are these the things you're talking about in the conference?
Yeah. And this April session is about specifically in the times that we're in right now, which are culturally very difficult, obviously. And there's a lot of conflict that is being fomented and raised all the time. When NALPers find themselves in the crosshairs of that in their institutions, and that can come up for lots of different reasons, but both the schools folks and the firm folks are dealing with constituents who are much more on the edge, much more of the time. What can we do to, first of all, give ourselves a sense of hope about that, and then know that we're showing up to that in the way that's the most supportive possible to the communities that we're serving in our NALP roles? For example, if we're mediating or facilitating a conflict between students, what are some skills that we want to skill up on just so we can feel more prepared to do that, since we will be called on it for it?
That's great, Melanie. Thank you so much for being on the show. I can't wait to see you in person and hear your presentation at the conference. I'm sure everybody else listening is going to be get excited about seeing you and talk about this and really learn from you. So thank you so much for sharing what you shared with us today, Melody.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to see you at the conference too.